This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
The championship belt is right here.
Joe Cowley.
Well, you know what? Joe Cowley writes something, he's not going to write that just because. You don't take that type of media.
Columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times.
According to Joe Cowley of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Covering Chicago sports for over 20 years.
A little birdie told me.
I'm the dean of Get It Done University. Don't little bird me.
All the latest news and notes on your Chicago Bulls.
That's Billy Donovan, head coach of the Bulls. He has got to go deal with Joe Cowley and all the questions that Joe is going to ask him.
It's my pleasure. It's great to be with you guys.
Joe Cowley.
The standard is the standard.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Bum stickity bum stickity bum. Yes, our guy Joe Cowley does an incredible job of covering the Bulls. He also is a good ombudsman when we start talking any sort of football. By the way, he also covered baseball for, 87 years.
Yeah, so Cowley's good at talking about all kinds of stuff. You're right. I assume right now he is outside of Aaron Rodgers' house with a boombox over his head trying to beg him to become a Steeler.
I was wondering about this, Joe. First of all, hi. Thank you for doing this. We appreciate you. And then, two, what do you think about the idea of Aaron Rodgers being a Steeler?
Mm-hmm. Flummoxed.
See? That was stellar.
What's happening?
Look, Aaron and I have a lot in common, so I think it'd be great.
What exactly do you guys... Did you date Shailene Woodley?
No, I'm on a darkness retreat right now with the Bulls. I've been in the darkness since Houston. I'm the only idiot that's gone on all these games, so I need some ayahuasca and... It's welcome to Sacramento, boys. 4:15 flight. It was great.
Wait, what do you mean you're the only one? Are you the only beat guy?
I was the only one that started off in Houston. I'm the only idiot that said, "Yeah, six games. That sounds fun."
So not even the beat guys are covering all the games.
I mean, you did get to witness
they've all kind of jumped in, but I was the idiot that decided that Hard Time with Andy Dufresne was a good idea.
Hey, man, chronicling the turnaround that Ime Udoka has had in Houston.
Seriously, that's a fun team.
That's a pretty interesting story.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. They play obviously an up-tempo style, young, hard-nosed, physical. And I'll say this. I mean, you know, as much as people want to rip on the Bulls, and trust me, it's all warranted, the last 3 weeks, ever since really the trade, it took a little growing pains for about a week or two, but I just love the way they actually are competing now and playing with some physicality. They're not very talented. They don't have, you know, that dude. So that's always going to be a problem. But at least now it's not some slappy team that's going out there and is not only bad but soft. They're at least playing with a little more edge. I think they gave away a little edge yesterday. It was probably the first time in a while they let a team out physical them. But for the most part, it's been a better brand of basketball to at least stomach.
Well, see, that was the reasoning for the call. It's exactly that. Like, what are we seeing? Are these just, you know, is it a succession of wins against other teams that are just kind of slogging their way through an odd portion of the schedule? Are the Bulls getting production that bad teams get from decent players just sort of by happenstance? Or is there actually something happening here in terms of something that Billy has built out of this very odd season?
Yeah, no, it's kind of a perfect storm. The bottom half to the middle of the East, they've all let go of the rope. So if you're getting a team like that, you could see in the fourth quarter that they really aren't trying to win the game. You're also seeing three guys that were acquired that all have a chip on their shoulder, whether it's to stay here or it's whether to prove the teams that moved them, Kevin Huerter and Zach Collins and Trey Jones, that those teams made a mistake. And so and also you're starting to see this time of the year, the idea of going, you know, 9-10 deep and playing with the third best pace in the league. You're seeing a lot of teams in the third and fourth quarter when you get to the free throw line, they got their hands grabbing the shorts on their knees. And the Bulls are all just kind of cycling guys in and ready to go because they're just used to it. They're in better condition. So it's kind of a perfect storm of things. And I give credit. I know Billy Donovan gets killed in that city. I give him a lot of credit for flipping the switch on this philosophy, offensive philosophy he wanted to do, because he knew he was void of pure talent with DeMar and Alex gone. And then on top of that, beating this idea of physicality into their heads and getting them to be a more well-rounded team that's going to run with you and they're also going to bruise you. So I think he gets a lot of credit for coaching to his philosophy and coaching to his team and giving this team an identity for the first time in a while. The identity used to be DeMar, help us. Now the identity is, hey, when we see you grabbing those shorts in the fourth quarter at the free throw line, we got your asses.
Joe, how do you feel Billy's done with the development of Modest Bouzelas?
Great, because Modest loves it. And that's the only one that matters at the end of the day. If he felt like he was somehow wronged or not getting the minutes or had a leash on him and the leash was being pulled too tight and the love was too tough, that'd be one thing. But that's not what you're getting from him. You're getting from a kid that's a yes sir, no sir type guy that appreciates everything that Billy's done, listens to Billy, tries to retain it, but obviously sometimes the speed shakes that out of his head. And I talked to him yesterday after he had a rough one, and Kevin Durant does that to a lot of guys. And he told me, he's like, you know, you could watch all the film you want. They could prep you all they want. When you go out there against KD, you got to go out there and you got to feel it. You got to understand it, because film is not going to do it justice. He's like, I can't believe how strong he is for how skinny he is. He just, and I'm like, yes, because he's a grown-ass man, and you're not. And Modest just laughs. So he gets it, and I think he appreciates the way he was kind of raised this first year with the Bulls.
Well, I was expecting a little more production once playing time opened up for him. Why is that not happening, and does that affect your thought process on him? Doesn't sound like it does to you.
No, because I understand his focus is trying to become a better defender. And I think he's learning how to exert that energy on the defensive end but still have it in the tank for the offensive end. And he's never played this many games. He's never played this many minutes. So it's kind of hitting him at once. I asked him about the rookie wall yesterday, and he's like, there ain't no rookie wall. He goes, this is just the NBA. It's a long season, and I'm just figuring it out. But I feel great. My confidence hasn't wavered. So I think it's just – He admittedly wants to be great, and he wants to be great on both ends of the ball. He wants to lead the team in shot blocking. He wants to be a top 10 shot blocker, rim protector, and he wants to be a highlight on offense. And when those are your goals and you're shooting for that moon, if you fall short and you hit the stars, that's pretty damn good.
Overall, when it comes to your personal draft philosophy versus what the Bulls' draft philosophy is, do you ever think that it's appropriate that you start looking for specific types of players instead of the most talented players? Because in trying to rebuild the Bulls, they might not get the best player might end up being a tantalizing guy like Patrick Williams, but that doesn't necessarily he might not have the type of makeup that you want to draft in the position that you're in.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is that's a function of the draft. The draft dictates that. If you end up in the top three of this draft, you're taking one of three guys, and be damn the rest of your roster. And VJ Edgecombe is right there as far as I'm concerned, because when he's going, when he's flying, I mean, he's got, and I'm not comparing him, but he's got some Anthony Edwards to him as far as violent finishing at the rim, athleticism. I mean, there's so many other parts of his game he doesn't have of Ant's, but as far as the flash, he's got that. So, you know, it's definitely a 1-2 and a 3, and it doesn't matter what your roster is. You know, if you have to move guys or they have to figure out. So, and then next year, it could be a 1-2-3-4-5 with that draft. So after that, yes, then you have to look and say, okay, our front court could possibly get very thin by 26. So maybe we look at a Derek Queen. I mean, that's probably the area code that the Bulls are now going to be drafting because their executive doesn't understand the importance of landing good dudes. He'd rather build a team out 1-12 like that works. And then at that point, once you get out of that talent pool, that first tier, then you're kind of looking at, yeah, does this dude fit what we want to do? Is he going to run? Is he going to play with high pace? Is he going to be a rim protector and play with physicality that we need? So that's when you start checking those boxes.
I brought up Derek Queen yesterday. He was one of the players that I mentioned that people should be watching during the tournament. I love his old man game. Like, it's straight up old man game. It is 14-foot baseline jumper. It is catch the ball in the high post, back you down, spin move. He's got all the tricks in his bag as an old school. If you would have dropped him into this league 30 years ago, he for sure would be a star. I really like him, and I know that he doesn't fit what the modern NBA is, but damn it if I don't love his game, Joe.
Yeah, and I think some of that is changing because you have so many good shooters on the floor now. You can go four out and keep one guy in. I mean, you can get away with that now. The idea that everybody's got to be a stretch big and everybody's got to be able to shoot the three, it's nice if you have that. But, you know, it's unfortunate that Okafor just kind of got caught in a window that because his talent was ridiculous. High school and even college, I was like, okay, this guy's going to change things. And then all of a sudden the league just said, now we don't play that way anymore. Well, now you start seeing it is that there are teams that are actually going back to that, having a physical big because they have four other guys that they feel confident are 40% shooters from three. So you can get away with it a little bit more now. So it's going to be interesting how he looks and what his shot looks like. I mean, you can always look at a guy's shot, especially, you know, there's a lot of coaches that believe how you shoot free throws will correlate to what kind of three-point shooter you can be. If it looks good from the free throw line, they feel like they can have the player development guys to get it out further. So, I wouldn't rule him out as a guy that can come in and play a role. He's not a game changer, and that's the problem. The Bulls need game changers, and they don't understand how to do that.
Boy, I just realized how much that sounds like. If you can shoot from the free throw line, we can get it out further. Sounds like this guy has doubles power, but we believe there's 20 or 30 home runs in there somewhere. And it just, sometimes it happens, and sometimes it doesn't. The other guy that Lawrence brought up yesterday, and we were talking about these two, is Liam McNeely, this kid from UConn. Now, that's just
from UConn. Yep.
Yeah, he's a great shooter. Like, he's a great shooter, and he runs relentlessly around screens, and he can shoot from deep, and he's just like, that's the skill set that has to be a starting point for me. And part of that is like, Patrick Williams could turn into a great shooter. Like, Dalen Terry can do a lot of things, but we'll see. Like, Julian Phillips is a great athlete, and he can add shooting. It's like, nah, man, in this league these days, get me a drop-dead shooter who can add more.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to avoid your question, Liam McNeely. I love his pedigree and stuff. The name he brought up that I'm just done with, Patrick Williams.
Yeah, man, tell
us. I'm just kind of done with him. There was a point yesterday, the modest dunk, where he dunks, he gets fouled, thrown to a cameraman, he's laying down. The whole bench is standing up, clapping, going crazy, all except 44, just sitting there. Coaches are up clapping, his teammates are up clapping, kind of walking on the floor to make sure, and you got one guy who's just sitting there. I'm just kind of done. I'm done with him.
Wow.
He needs to hit rock bottom now, and unfortunately they gave him a contract where I think he has lost his love for basketball, and he's would probably dispute that. But I just see a guy that happens to be built like that, happens to have a skill set, and happens to got paid and just doesn't give a damn anymore. And so, I kind of saw that the last year with Adam Dunn, where it was just a guy that would rather be in a deer stand, but he just happened to be able to hit 500-foot home runs. So, hell, why don't he do that a couple times a week? And that's kind of how Patrick Williams is kind of rubbing me right now, where you've gone through different coaches now. They've had to find different coaches because mentally you don't like this coach and you don't – you're not that good, dude. You should be, they should give you a ball boy until you figure it out. So I'm just kind of over him. I'm kind of done with the excuses. And it was a bad draft pick made even worse because Arturas couldn't admit he was wrong and opened up the checkbook and gave it to him. And now he's giving it to the Bulls.
Wow. I mean, where does it rank among Arturas' mistakes to not realize this and cut bait via trade or simply not sign as opposed to empowering and doing what he just did? That's got to be very high on the list of mistakes then.
It's the biggest mistake he's made because he compounded it. He wouldn't admit that the guy doesn't have it. He wouldn't admit that he took a sixth man from Florida State who couldn't even start because of the body and the build and just didn't look at the man. And now we're stuck with NBA player that's built like a guy that should be 2010, but he still wants to play like a child. And it's just, and then he paid him on top of it. He paid him. He didn't even let the market set the price. He paid him because Arturas had to show he's smarter than everybody else.
Joe, how do the Bulls view the play-in tournament?
Like it's the Larry O'Brien trophy is about to be held up, and that's the problem because most of the NBA doesn't really care about it and thinks it's a joke. But the Bulls have been kind of just – which, to their credit, if you could get a coach to get a bunch of guys to jump in a foxhole for some crap a trophy and then you get to go to Cleveland and get run out of the building, yay. But, you know, I think the rest of the league, you're seeing how the rest of the league is dealing with it. It's like embarrassing. You think Sacramento's not embarrassed that they're in the play-in? You think Golden State and Dunleavy was embarrassed before they made that trade for Jimmy that they were stuck in the play-in? I mean, that was embarrassing to them. For the Bulls, it's a freaking gold medal. So, and maybe that's the edge they have this last month in these last 13 games, is it means something to them, and they believe in chasing it down and getting as best in the seedings you can get. And, you know, if they can host a game, that's what, $1.5 million in Jerry's pocket for one game. So, you know, God bless them.
So, you know, ownership is cool with it. Seems like AK's cool with it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, AK's cool with it.
Oh, yeah, ownership's cool with it.
And AK's
cool. You know what else ownership's cool with?
What else?
The Boston Celtics selling for $6.1 billion. Because that means right now the Bulls are $5.6 billion easily, don't you think?
Yeah, the Celtics sold for the most of any professional sports franchise ever this morning.
Yep.
And
you don't think that put a smile on Michael and Jerry's face? And now all of a sudden they're not a $4.8 or a $5 billion, that they might actually be a $5.5-$5.6 billion team right now.
So is Michael going to get out when Jerry passes and gets out of the Sox? Is Michael going to get out too?
No, from everything I've been told, the Sox are movable because of lack of salary cap and the belief that eventually you just aren't going to make the money that you want to make. But the Bulls are a gift that keeps on giving. So I would say that the Bulls are staying put for a very, very long time. And the Sox will be disposable as soon as Jerry either decides or Jerry goes to a different place.
How does a seemingly honorable basketball lifer with the soul of a coach survive amidst all the crap that you're describing?
You talking about Billy?
Yes.
Well, they love him. Ownership loves him, and front office loves him.
But how does he survive? How does he choose to survive?
Oh, how does he deal with it? You know what? Because Billy, he just loves ball. I mean, he's wired like. Yeah, I mean, he brought up Patino, and obviously the two different men who have two different paths and beliefs in life. But the one belief that they share and is their kinship is they love ball. And Patino had to get fired from Louisville, went to Greece to coach. This is one of the most successful college coaches of all time. Went to Greece, went to Iona just to get back on the stage he's at now. And Billy's wired the same way. He just loves it. Billy's one of those dudes that just he's going to have to die on the court. He just loves it. He's not like, yeah, this has a shelf life. And I see, you know, Fred Hoiberg to me always coached because there was something bigger afterwards and he liked the lifestyle. Billy just loves X's and O's. I've never been around a dude that just, you know, he was on my podcast and we didn't even talk about the Bulls. We talked about the running Rebs and we talked about some of the kids he was recruiting in Cleveland that I covered, James Posey and Melvin Levitt and Damon Strang, and he knows all those names. And it was just like two guys. And at the end, he even said to me, he goes, no one under 50 years old is going to listen to this podcast and get anything out of it. I was like, I don't care. I loved it. So, I mean, that's just Billy. He just loves ball. He will talk ball any day that ends in Y.
Sir, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right, you guys. Hey, hop a flight out here. Join the darkness retreat.
No, you already left my favorite spot. Once you left Phoenix, Sacramento, you can keep that. I'm good.
Go find Aaron. Go get him and put a helmet on him.
He's coming. He's coming.
Oh, my God. It's perfect. You deserve each other.
That is Joe Cowley of the Sun-Times. He does a fabulous job of covering the Bulls, and he likes to throw a baseball thought in there for you, too.
Adam Dunn catching strays. That was awesome.
Adam Dunn got an Oscar, though, when he got out.
Man.
Shout out to him. Categories is next. Speaks is very excited about it.
I really am.
Next on The Score.
So, I think it's time to play the game.
We're playing the game?
Yes. We're playing the game.
Do we have to play the game?
What's the game?
The game is called Categories. We play it once a week on Spiegel and Ohms. There are two sports categories, one non-sports category, historically anyway. I frequently am the host. I will give the category, and then the boys will go around and name items that are in the category until everyone is gone. You at home, in the car, in the garage, in the cubicle, get to play along as well. Are you ready, peoples?
I think so.
Shane, Tanny, you guys ready?
No.
Yep.
Tanny, let me know when you're ready.
I will sit here all day.
Oh, man. Sorry. Don't do that.
I think he's ready.
Here we go. The NCAA tournament is upon us. I am looking at a list in front of me of the coaches who have appeared in the most Final Fours. As a head coach, a college basketball coach, who has made it to the most Final Fours in NCAA tournament history? Lawrence, you're first.
Wait, I need some clarification.
Sure.
Active coaches?
Nope. All coaches in the history of college basketball.
Dean Smith.
Dean Smith, 11 Final Fours. He is third. Tanny.
Mike Krzyzewski.
Number one with 13 Final Fours.
John Wooden.
Number two with 12 Final Fours.
Bill Self.
Bill Self is indeed on this list at four. He's got made to four Final Fours. He's tied for last place on this list. I don't go lower than four. Tanny.
John Calipari.
And he made also four Final Fours. He's on this list. Shane.
Jim Boeheim.
Jimmy Boeheim, five Final Fours from Syracuse, yes.
Someone say Rick Pitino?
Not yet. You Rick just Pitino. Did. Five Final Fours for Rick Pitino. Tanny.
Gene Cady.
Gene Cady is a no. I'm so sorry. Gene Cady's a no.
That's fine. I'll just go back to my audiobook called Chaos by Tom O'Neill about the secret history of the 1960s and Charles Manson.
You finished it already.
I got to go back. There's some stuff I missed in there about Jack Ruby.
You beat it.
It's very timely.
You beat me by weeks on our battle to get to 16 hours. Tanny has dominated me. Shane, I need a college basketball coach who's made the most Final Fours.
Roy Williams.
Number four on the list with nine. Very good.
John Thompson?
John Thompson is not on the list. Need one more, Shane, for the win.
Is Billy Donovan on the list?
Billy Donovan is on the list with four. Could have had Tom Izzo, Denny Crum, Adolph Rupp. It's always fun to say Adolph.
Yeah, I'm sure you love that name.
Even when Flula's not here. Bob Knight on the list. Guy Lewis, Lute Olson, and more. Shane wins category number one. All right, here's category number two. I put this one together myself. This was fun to do the research on today. I'm looking at a list which I believe is complete, but if you come up with a name that's not here, I'll look it up, but I believe it's complete. These are NFL players and Major League Baseball players who appeared in the NCAA tournament.
Okay.
These are football players who were in the NFL and or baseball players who were in MLB who also played college basketball and appeared in the NCAA tournament. Chris Tannehill, you are first.
Julius Peppers.
Julius Peppers is correct. He's one of two people who played in a Super Bowl and a Final Four at North Carolina in the
Who's
NCAA
the
tournament. I can't give you that answer. I don't know. Well, actually, I can. I can give it to you in a minute when somebody guesses it. No, maybe I can. I don't know. Shane.
Kenny Lofton.
Kenny Lofton is correct. He backed up Steve Kerr at Arizona.
Antonio Gates.
Antonio Gates made it to the Elite Eight. With absolutely made it to the Elite Eight with what's it called? Kent State. Absolutely correct.
I was so demonstrative here. Oh, sorry. Is it my turn or is it Shane's?
It is your turn.
So I was so demonstrative because Lawrence took my guess
took
there.
Your guess.
But it gave me time to think of a great all-around athlete like Dave Winfield.
Dave Winfield, 1972 with the University of Minnesota. Drafted in all three sports and certainly played in the NCAA tournament. Shane.
Just ask him about it. He'll tell you. Tony Clark.
Tony Clark.
Guy loves talking about himself.
Oh, I'm so sorry. He didn't make it to the tournament.
Oh, I just knew he played college basketball.
The MLBPA guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great guess.
Damn it.
I had to look it up. He did not play in the tournament.
It's okay. I don't have to win every category.
Are you looking it up right now?
No, I did look it up, but I just want to make sure I'm right.
Yeah, because we don't want Shane to lose out.
I know.
I could be wrong. I could very well be wrong. I don't have to win every category.
No, he played college basketball, but he did not play in the NCAA tournament. I'm so sorry. Shane, you're done in this category. Lawrence.
Tony Gonzalez.
Tony Gonzalez played at Cal with Sharif Abdur-Rahim. That is correct.
Lawrence is brave, man. Me and him sometimes are on the same wave, like thinking of the tight ends.
Yes.
You know, but I think
there's
I know there's there's more. If you're going to drop that hint on me, did Jimmy Graham do it?
The University of Miami. Yes, sir. Jimmy Graham played in the NCAA tournament. There are many more.
There are?
Yes. Some of them are deep and old names you might not know, but there's some others that you ought to come up with.
J.J. Redick.
Shane, you're out.
Are we out of baseball players?
No, we are not. There's two more baseball players I'd say maybe you should know. Maybe just one.
I know this is off category. All right, I'll take another guess.
Okay.
I'll guess Antoine Randle L.
Damn right. Lost to Ron Artest's St. John's team at the University of Indiana. Antoine Randle L., current Bears assistant head coach, is on this list. Tanny.
Did Grant Hill's dad do it?
Calvin Hill?
That's outstanding. No, I don't have Calvin Hill on this list.
What about Harlan Hill?
Yeah.
Hey, is it pro bowl?
Lawrence, you got one more for fun?
Charlie Ward?
Charlie Ward never played in the NFL. I guessed him.
That's right.
As I was putting it together, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. He didn't make the NFL.
Vince Wilfork.
No, but can I give you some other ones on this list?
Yeah, Trace Armstrong. How we miss that?
Martellus Bennett.
Oh, that's right. At Texas A&M.
Martellus Bennett. Mo Alley-Cox, the Colts tight end, played at VCU. Donovan McNabb, people.
That's right.
For Syracuse when they lost to Kentucky in 96. Terrell Owens, 1 minute in round one at Tennessee Chattanooga.
I would have never gotten a T.O.
Me neither. Brad Johnson, the quarterback, played.
He was on the basketball team?
He played at Florida State. He lost to Iowa with B.J. Armstrong in the NCAA tournament. Is that awesome? And then the baseball one I thought you'd get is Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge at BYU had the buzzer beater coast to coast to reach the Elite Eight.
Oh, man.
And then two last ones from baseball just for fun. Randy Wynn was Steve Nash's teammate at Santa Clara.
Did Tony Gwynn get to the tournament? Because didn't he play at San Diego State?
That's a great call, but he must not have made it to the tournament because I was looking it up.
He's a point guard, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then there are others that are old school, but the late Ryan Miner was the Big Eight Player of the Year at Oklahoma, and he replaced Cal Ripken Jr. at shortstop for the Baltimore Orioles.
Wow.
So
that's a good category.
I put it together myself. That was damn fun. Thank you, peoples. All right, here you go. So Lawrence got that one. Category three. You guys are all excited about the White Sox food, aren't you?
Yep.
Yes.
You like eating food at White Sox games.
Yeah, don't like watching the baseball. You got to occupy your time with something else.
Let's go, sustenance.
I'm looking. And last year's All-Star representative, the Campfire Milkshake, is back for another year.
And now it's got a contender with the birthday cake shake thing.
I'm looking here at all of the concession stands on the 100 level of Guaranteed Rate Field.
Like the names of them?
From the MLB Ballpark app.
No. This sucks.
Either the names or the items. The items will probably get it done. Some of them are just listed by the items.
All right. So wait, can we just name the player? Because I might not know what the actual stand is called, but I might know what players they are.
What do you mean players?
A lot of those concession stands on the back wall are named after a player.
No, you name the food item if you can't come up with the name of the concession stand.
Okay.
Oh,
you
okay.
got me?
All right.
So, but if you think about it now, you'll probably be able to come up with the concession stand on the 100 level.
Okay.
But if you name me the food item, I'll probably give it to you.
Okay.
Shane, you're up.
The Burger Barn.
The Burger Barn is, of course, one of the concession stands on the 100 level at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Street Taco.
Street Taco. 35th Street Tacos. Absolutely. Tanny.
Thank you for saving elotes for me.
Elote. There are three elotes stands on the 100 level. Three. Shane.
I'm just going to give you Polish and Onions.
Yes.
The Vienna kiosk.
I think I know the name of this one. Go ahead, give it to him. He deserves it.
Well, there's bratwurst and sausage. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's two of
that.
Those. There's two bratwurst and sausage. Absolutely. Lawrence.
Churros.
Churros. Damn right. There are two churros on the 100 level of Guaranteed Rate Field. Tanny.
This is tough when you haven't been to a game in almost 2 years. The Mini Minoso's Cuban Comet Cafe.
That's a good one.
Damn right. The Cuban sandwiches. Absolutely. Cuban sandwiches are there.
They got a couple Dippin' Dots carts.
Damn right. The Dippin' Dots is listed as one of the concessions. Lawrence.
Does the Lemon Chill count with the Dippin' Dots? Are they the same?
I think they're different.
I think they're sold together.
I don't have the Lemon Chill's right. Not here. I'll give you another one, though.
Margaritas.
It's just food I'm looking for.
Not alcohol?
Yeah.
Dang it.
I'll give you one more.
Beggar's Pizza.
Damn right. Which one? Beggar's Pizza and ice cream? I'll give you that.
Oh.
There's another one. We'll knock it off. Beggar's Pizza Pub is the second one that's listed. So, yes, Beggar's is done. Tanny.
Funnel Cake.
Funnel Cake.
Oh, good job, man.
There are two funnel cake stands on the 100 level.
The strong outings year after year.
Shane.
Rainbow Cone.
Damn right. Rainbow Ooh. Cone's on the 100 level. There's one of those.
Cotton Candy.
Oh, I don't have Cotton Candy listed.
Oh, boo!
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't think they have a stand for cotton candy. I think it's
it's like an add-on.
The guys who walk around, I think, just carry them.
Yeah.
All right, I'll take the L.
Lawrence is out. Tanny.
Damn it.
The Irish nacho stand.
Yes, there's nachos, which is just the Irish one, and then there's another nachos, Buenos Nachos.
Okay, so did you just take what I was going to say? Because he said specifically the Irish nachos, which is French fries. I was going to say the nacho helmet, which is different.
Shane gets completely different. Yes, he is correct.
Tanny can't say the French fry nacho, and then you just give, they also have other nachos.
Okay, that's fine. You're good. Back to you, Tanny. We're done with nachos.
Yeah, I don't know if this was covered earlier.
Has it been mentioned?
But there is one. I think it's called the Sweet Spot, where it's just ice cream and stuff. I don't know if you have that lumped in with what you were saying earlier,
There's two different places
to get soft serve ice cream on the 100 level.
Is that the creamery? Would it be
Absolutely
the creamery?
It is, please.
Of course she's going to say yes. No, that's actually not it. I guess I'm out.
I'm giving him the creamery. Let's keep going. Shane, what do you got?
There's a stand for tamales.
I don't have tamales listed on the MLB Ballpark app, the official site.
That sucks.
I don't have tamales. Tanny, got one more?
Is this Bill Melton's Rooftop Dogs? Is that on your list there?
Well, the footlong
Comiskey Dogs.
Nobody mentioned hot dogs. There are seven hot dog stands.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like Shane did mention it because he said sausage.
He said it's sausages.
It's different. There's a hot dog one, and there's one that's got Polish and Italian.
I know, but Vienna beef kind of covers.
I don't want to be a Tanny and just say that one nachos is all nachos.
Wow.
I don't want to be
one.
That's why I was very specific there in my last
and I appreciate
there.
That. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't want to be a speed. I agree with you, by the way. Sorry.
I agree.
So
I
know. There was hot dogs. We're done. But there was Comiskey Dogs.
That's what I just said, yeah.
And then there's the Carvery to go along with the Creamery.
Wait, what's the Carvery?
I don't know. Ham and stuff.
There you go.
You can get that on the 100 level and not just Scout Seats?
Yeah.
Italian beef and meatball sandwiches? We would have accepted.
Bona.
Yeah. Yeah. How about the Mac Shack for the mac and cheese, ladies and gentlemen?
I love mac and cheese. Chicago. Just don't want it in my truck with me.
They serve nothing but toothy critters.
The classics and grill. The grill, sweet and savory. Mini melts. Anyway, there's a spirited game.
Good category.
Categories.
So wait, we all won one, right?
Yeah, everybody won one.
That's pretty great.
There you go. Congratulations to all. You know, the real listener, the real winner.
Oh, you blew it. You see, you take my line and you don't even execute it properly. Good Lord, Speaks.
Who's the real winner, Tanny?
You blew it.
Nope.
Come on, say it. Who's
they
the
know who
winner?
They are. It's the listener.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that.
We don't have anything scheduled for the next segment.
What do you want to do, man? We can do some stuff. 5 o'clock, we're going to do some big picture baseball stuff that ties in to the Cubs and the Sox.
If you want, we could stay on food and talk about the Masters.
Oh, that's actually a great idea. We have an opportunity, all four of us, to show how good we are at dinner. It's not just Tanny who gets to be elite at dinner. Let's figure that out.
All right, let's do that next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Go ahead, listeners. Get that stirred up.
All right, well, it's definitely stirred up now. You know, you're on the...
He's the best.
I don't know. Nobody listens to me. That's fine. But,
this is the most popular radio show in Chicago.
Well, so. I know. Okay, you said it, Lawrence, not me, but...
We'll send you the book.
Yeah, send me the book.
Afternoons on The Score.
Have the ability to learn fast. I think that's my phone. It's my alarm to eat.
Oh, it is that time of year where you have to get very quiet because Amen Corner, where you just pray that you survive, is coming up on the Masters.
Butler Cabin is a very special place to be. And once you've made it to Butler Cabin, then you get to go to Butler Dining Room. Is that what it's called? Is that where they serve dinner? At the Butler restaurant?
No, they only serve coffee there. Jimmy brews it.
He probably does. But no,
there's no mirrors in the bathrooms.
There's only giant fish tanks. Giant fish tanks.
And you don't have to pay your bill.
Uh-huh. Jim Nance is like, how did Jimmy get in this cabin? This is my cabin. I wait here all year for the Masters.
He does.
So, but when you're the Masters champ, you get to plan the menu for the big meal. Right, Lawrence? This is how it goes. That you are the winner, so you get to plan the
entire
dinner. The champion's
dinner menu.
Okay. And you thought Scottie Scheffler's menu is on point.
I feel like he nailed it.
I haven't seen it yet. I wanted to let you make the big reveal here
okay,
on the show.
Okay, so here's what the appetizers are.
Okay.
He's going to go with cheeseburger sliders, served Scottie style, which I don't know what that means. But so cheeseburger sliders and firecracker shrimp.
Yeah, that's delicious.
Sweet Thai chili and sriracha mayo for you to dip in if you want.
Mm-hmm.
The next appetizer is Papa Chef's meatball and ravioli bites.
So he's hitting three different nationalities here. They're kind of, they're populist. Is that one way to describe it, Shane, our food guy? These are populist. If they're not in a high end necessarily.
Well, from what I've read, he's connecting a lot of it to what his dad would make for him growing up.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Yeah. It's pretty nice. So those are your...
apps?
Yeah, that's the apps. First course, Texas-style chili, cheddar cheese, jalapeno, and corn chips.
Man, I'm full already.
Main course.
I don't know. What room do you have left? What do you have? One shrimp? One firecracker shrimp?
Wood-fired cowboy ribeye or blackened redfish. Family-style macaroni and cheese, jalapeno creamed corn, soy-glazed Brussels sprouts, chipotle-limed roasted sweet potatoes.
Man, what'd you say? Jalapeno creamed corn?
Yep.
Let's go.
And then dessert. Warm chocolate chip cookie skillet with vanilla bean ice cream.
Yeah, it's very solid. There's some basics that he's hitting there. Again,
everyone can eat here.
I stand by populist. It's not like he's not going like high-end fancy hoi polloi, but that sounds really good.
There's not a lot that I would change, honestly, to him, but you know, maybe if I had to make an amendment to Scottie's menu, I would get a little bit more adventurous with the dessert. Skillet cookie, love it. Maybe, though, maybe you go with a nice gelato there instead of just vanilla bean ice cream. And maybe that you go like caramel gelato with the cookie skillet.
I need a little something salty. As long as there's enough salt in the cookies.
You could go sea salt caramel gelato.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm going to tell you what Scotty style is for the burgers.
Thank you.
Please.
It's a smash burger, usually double smash burger, and then he puts fries on the burger and then just ketchup. So it's melted American cheese, Kraft single, what a smash burger should be, and then he just puts fries on the burger too.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'd miss the pickle myself.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah.
And I'd want some onion on there, but that's just a personal preference.
Shane, that's Matty style.
Shane, do you have any objections with Scotty Scheffler's menu?
No, I'm very interested to see what the meatball and ravioli bites are. If it's a meatball inside of a ravioli, which would make it more of like a raviolo, like a bigger one, or if it's just like skewered meatball through a cheese ravioli.
Yeah, or that, what
either sounds great.
What if it's a meatball with a ravioli inside it? Could you do that?
Probably not. The pasta wouldn't really cook.
Yeah. All right, that's a good point. Well, we should. You had the idea. We need to do our own here. This is an opportunity for us, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to do our own. We're going to release the same amount of courses in the same graphic, the same menu style, and we'll have that out before the Masters.
When do they eat? The night before round one, or they eat earlier in the week? Because you can't tell people what to eat the night before the tournament. You know what I mean?
It's April 8th.
So
that's before the tournament.
Right, but is that the Tuesday before the tournament? I wonder. I'll have to look on the calendar. It is the Tuesday. I nailed it. Because the Wednesday before the tournament, if somebody wants to eat a specific pre-tournament golf meal, you can't ask them to also eat your meal.
And Wednesday's family day, right? Isn't that the day when the family gets to be on the course? Or is that Monday?
Is it Ladies' Day? Is that Wednesday?
I think it's like you can have, like, that's the day where, like, your wife is your caddy. Your son is your caddy. It's the par three, right? The par three is
Wednesday.
Is it Wednesday or is it Monday?
I think it's Monday. Yeah, I think it's Monday. I think it's earlier.
Where's Barry Rosner?
Wednesday is ladies' night, and the feeling's right. I do believe. I'm pretty sure. If you hear any noise, you know.
It's just you and the boys?
It's on ladies' night. Exactly. Thank you for clarifying. So, all right, I like this. So we get to do the exact same number of courses in our menu. All right, very cool. Oh, man, that does sound good, actually, that entire thing. Lawrence, it's out. I wait for it every year, and now it has a companion.
Put it back in.
The True Pitching Aces in baseball is now accompanied with a list of the very best position players in baseball. Both lists have been revealed. How many of the best pitchers and best position players are actually part of the Cubs and or White Sox? I've done the digging and the researching and can share it with you next.
I can think about it during the break and give you a bad answer.
That's how we do it.
All right, it's next here on The Score.